and welcome to the Common Geeking Program, a book club or common reading program for geek culture. Each episode, we select a topic that four people will discuss from their own geeky, nerdy perspectives. Joining me this episode are...
Hello, my name is Colin Ketchin, and this week I will be representing Tron, and also Tron Legacy, a.k.a.
Insert Daft Punk here.
That Tron Daft Punk edition. All right, cool. Well, I'm done with that. Moving on.
Ed,
say your fucking words.
I thought Keenan was going to be like, and also...
And
no,
also,
we never do that.
Yeah, we never done that.
I don't... Okay, shut up.
And introducing, in the left-hand corner of my screen...
Hi, my name is Edward Ryan, and today I'll be representing Doom and Doom.
And Doom 64.
Doom 3 BFG VR?
No, not that
Doom
one.
Doom Ultimate Ninja Shippuden 4?
Hi, I'm Taimu, or Chowder, whichever you prefer. And I'll be representing the movie formerly known as The Kingdom of the Sun, Emperor's New Groove.
Oh.
Was that the original title, Kingdom of the Sun, colon, Emperor's New Groove?
No.
Because that sounds interesting.
No, in production it was called Kingdom of the Sun, then its title changed multiple times on top of the script and tone and...
I see. And I'm your host, Keenan Kodish. For this episode's topic, I've selected two comics. Batman issue number 222, right? Yes.
Correct.
From 1970. And we're also looking at the Batman Rebirth issue, which was released
number
in 2016.
One.
Yeah, it's number one. What we're going to look at is how, over the course of years, or sometimes simply, you know, over the course of development, properties and series and franchises change tone and theme and, you know, character all through their creation, and sometimes end up being very different than what they were originally intended to be. Let's get started. First, I had you guys read, like I said, Batman issue number 222.
Dead till proven alive.
It was a wild ride.
I found some pretty ridiculous Batman. I didn't know which one I wanted to show. There's so many to choose
from.
Yeah,
no Bat Baby? Come on, man.
I want to request that we just straight summarize the plot of this.
Okay.
Batman, dead till proven alive. The greatest Chris Nolan movie that never happened.
So Robin's in college, or Dick Grayson is in college. He's Robin. And he's listening to the radio with his homies. And there's this band called The Twists, who are definitely not a stand-in for the Beatles.
They're
and one
the
of
Beatles.
The members
They're
of
the
Twists, Saul.
Saul Cartwright.
There's a rumor or like a theory that he's actually dead. And that the Saul in the band now is a lookalike. Sound familiar?
It's not Paul.
And Batman and Robin want to solve this mystery.
You know how Eddie just had to say, Dick Grayson, he's Robin, with no subtlety to convey to our listeners who Robin is? The comic is somehow less subtle. They will show you a panel of Dick Grayson talking and just fucking draw a psychedelic Robin behind him. And they will say, Dick Grayson, parentheses, Robin. And they do the same thing with Batman.
No. It was Dick, parentheses, Robin, Grayson.
As well as Bruce, parentheses, Batman, Wayne.
Like it's their middle names or their stage names.
The artist formerly known as Batman.
Pretty sure Batman needs some assless chaps now.
Oh, God.
Oh, God, yes.
They get suspicious because they play the tape on a different speed, and it says, sure was a ball, Saul. Too bad it's over. Which makes them think that he's dead. And I don't know, apparently the Caped Crusader and the Boy Wonder have nothing better to do.
The Penguin isn't like robbing a bank or something.
The Riddler's not killing someone. That's the worst part.
So what happens here is Robin basically calls up Batman and says, yo, I think, based on my theory of this news, you know, clipping, this guy might be dead. I just think it. no evidence. Nobody else thinks this.
Robin's a conspiracy theorist.
Yeah, it's a conspiracy theory.
The worst part is that Batman's like, my God, Dick, you're right.
He's like immediately on the case.
Yeah, he's like,
Like, Batman hasn't had a case in a while. Or I don't know how desperate he got. Maybe fucking Lucius Fox mismanaged the finances and he's like, I will take any money I can get.
Batman, he's like in a robe. He hasn't got a dress before like 1 o'clock in like 4 weeks.
So the twists are coming to town and Bruce invites them to stay at Wayne Manor so that they won't be like bombarded by paparazzi and stuff at a hotel. And they're like, great idea, Bruce Wayne, who we've never met before.
Because that's not weird.
You're a rich guy. We trust you. Which, that's clearly some kind of commentary on society.
I mean...
It's a very hard-hitting issue.
Society does tend to trust the rich for no real reason.
Oh my God.
Did you also notice everyone in this comic was white, and the only non-white male was an extra in one frame?
Oh my God, guys. What?
I didn't notice that guy.
Yeah. There was a woman who you saw from behind when the Beatles were getting out of the plane.
No, the twists.
They think then that the fake Saul is holding a tape recorder, and that's his voice somehow pre-recorded.
Do you think they have a song called Beatle and Shout?
That's great.
Oh, man. That is the earliest and most definitive episode title we've ever had.
Yeah, so like...
Shake it up, baby, now.
Then the whole plot becomes them trying to like get Saul's tape recorder because they think it's like making the voice new.
No, no, no. They want the tape recorder so they can compare the wavelengths.
Yes, so after all this it's fucking science. Scooby-Doo chasing around, Saul is actually not dead. Every other band member is dead because they crashed a plane in, like, the Himalayas.
Yep.
And these are all just shitty replacements, and Saul is racked with survivor guilt. And it came out of nowhere.
Right?
There were no clues.
At all.
There were no clues. There were no stakes. And when it was over, Batman was like, well, I figured it out. End of story. But he didn't figure it out. They told him.
And they also tried to kill Batman over this. I want to be perfectly clear. They tried to kill Batman over this, not Saul.
Okay, no, I want to be perfectly clear. Robin, the boy wonder, got hit once by a musician, and he was knocked out cold.
Yeah, yeah, like a random musician, not even like, I play like heavy metal drums, I need to be in top physical condition.
Or not even just Henry Rollins, you know?
Yeah, it was a musician who Saul said was bad at his job.
Well, the reason he's so bad at his job is because he's at the gym getting swole.
Okay, so that's a pretty good summary, I think, of that comic.
Yeah.
Jeffrey can cobble something together.
Oh, God.
Let's move on to modern day Batman.
Modern day Batman, also known as Batman.
The Batman.
Or good Batman.
So I also had the representatives. They had to read Batman Rebirth, which was the new launch of the Rebirth reimagining of everything in the DC line. It is the most recent incarnation of Batman, so I thought that would be a good place to compare. And in this, Batman is... Now I feel ridiculous saying this plot, now knowing what the original plots of Batman used to be. This one now sounds like the one that's like stupid and made up.
Well, that's because this one is less plausible than Dead Till Proven Alive.
Yeah.
But also, Dead Till Proven Alive is...
Yeah.
I'm going to save it for the ratings.
So, Chowder, why don't you tell us what the Rebirth story is?
Honestly, I kind of forgot. I read it, like, really late last night.
Son of a bitch. All right.
Dibs on explaining it.
All right, Colin, you go ahead.
It opens with a hit new villain with a spectacular name, Calendar Man.
Well, that's not a new villain.
Well, a spectacular new villain to Colin.
All right.
Calendar Man.
Calendar Man is kind of old and really fucked up.
Yeah, well, basically what he's doing is he's changing the seasons, and I forget what the stakes are.
He's releasing deadly spores.
There we go. So he's changing the seasons and releasing more spores, and like his aging is tied to the changing of the seasons. But the seasons are changing like every day. Like the way the whole thing is formatted, it's like Monday, spring, Tuesday, summer. Unlike the ham-fisted exposition of Dead Till Proven Alive, where everyone Scooby-Doos their way through finding new facts, this actually built the story in a way that didn't make sense at first, but once you get to the end, you piece it together, you're like, I get it, it's a week. And it's kind of just following Batman fighting this guy, but more like, I don't know, I guess figuring out how to fight this guy or what he's doing.
Or sometimes you just see him hanging on the edge of a thing.
Yeah.
While shirtless and pantsless.
Listen, he was working a helipad, one, and two, working out.
I mean, he was looking damn fine, just I wish there was more assless chaps, you know?
Oh, wow. You're making a push for assless chaps.
So, also, I wanted to point out that, like, this whole comic, Alfred's just, like, trying to eat an avocado, I think.
Yeah, and he keeps dumping the avocado into a grape.
Yeah, I didn't understand why he kept throwing the avocados into a hole in the ground.
Yeah. Well, the comic basically ends with no resolution because there isn't a resolution. This is the first issue of a thing. Because
there's a next comic, yeah.
Exactly. And really all it's doing is setting up the changing of the seasons, the deadly spores, and the new sidekick, Duke Thomas slash maybe Nightwing, who's not Robin.
He's not Nightwing.
I don't know enough about DC. I quit.
No. He's Command a new guy. Q. Like he's, Colin's gone. He's like completely new. Okay. It's actually kind of cool because in this version,
just like Calendar Man,
most of the fucking shut up. Most of like the Bat family is like, listen, Batman, we like you and stuff, but we realize that your lifestyle isn't super healthy. We want to be better.
Yeah.
I think a major thing that we have to mention, though,
major thing
is the tone of Batman Rebirth is very different.
Yeah.
Multiple times, Batman is set up and like we know he's going to make it out of it. Because it's, you know, the beginning of his series. But multiple times they say, hey, Batman, that could kill you. And he's like, do it anyway, because I need to save the city. And I think that tone...
Gotham needs
me. Like, the stakes are real.
Hanging from this helipad.
Think about it. Even in Batman 222, when he found out, did that change literally anything?
No, nobody was at risk. The people already died a year ago. And they didn't even grapple with, do we really want to ruin the twists for the public?
But did he even tell the public?
No, he was just like, all right.
That's the worst part. He was just like...
It was just personal curiosity, yeah.
Yeah, I have satisfied my curiosity.
Kind of a jerk, really.
Yeah, although I feel like this is just a case of, like, cherry picking something. Because, like...
avocado picking.
Yeah, a case of avocado picking from a pool, because I feel like this comic is a bit more atypical of what was old school Batman, so I don't know.
See, the thing is, I've read a bunch of these, and I mean a lot, and I've like read them sequentially. I've read them sequentially, and Chatter, I don't want to...
Batman's thirsty. Thirsty for assless chaps and avocados.
This issue is not an outlier.
All right, I'll take your word for it, man.
Like, I just want to make clear that, Chowder, this was not an atypical performance of the Bat in 1970.
Okay, fair enough.
For our representatives, first up, we have Colin with Tron, you said? Let's go.
So there was this little movie called Tron, and then there was this big movie called Tron Legacy. Both were disappointments to Disney, because Tron Legacy only made $500 million, and that's not
only
Disney
half
money.
Only half a billion.
Only like $500 million. That is not Disney money.
That's so little money that they didn't make a sequel.
There have been rumors that it might be happening again, but
they
we'll
made
see.
A TV show sequel, though. That was also a prequel, but it wasn't. It was weird.
All right, so Tron was a sci-fi movie in 1982, credited with the popularization of CG in films. So you're welcome for all the great special effects of the 2000s.
It actually didn't win the Oscar for like special effects.
Because they were like,
they
no, computers are
cheating.
Yeah, they thought computers were cheating.
Yeah, isn't that hilarious?
And now that's the status quo. Now, Tron is a movie about this arcade owner named Kevin Flynn, who made all these video games, but his old company stole them from him.
Income.
And wouldn't give him the rights. So he broke in to the company to get the evidence that they fucked him over. But then the computer sucked him in and the whole game takes place in the computer and he's bouncing from video game to video game. And that sounds really interesting, but I promise you, it's not. The movie is boring, but
ooh,
it's
whoa.
Cool.
That's some controversy right there.
Oh, I love the original Tron, but I watched it again recently.
Tron's great.
It's great, but it is a, kind of a boring movie.
Yeah. I haven't seen it, so I wouldn't know.
It was kind of spectacular. It's still spectacular to look at. It's really interesting, the techniques that they used to make that work out. It was very influential, and it had a cult following because, you know, it started CG. This day, a lot of people still like it. Jeff Bridges did a great job in it. So 2010 is what?
7 years ago.
That's 28 years. 28 years after the original. Am I doing that math right? Yes.
Sure.
So 28 years after the original, Disney was like, hey, guys, let's make another Tron movie. And this was fucking big budget. It was gorgeous. They took all these ideas and they redefined them to be, like, you know, modern. And it had kind of a cool sci-fi plot.
They reanimated Jeff Bridges' face.
They did. They had old Jeff Bridges and young Jeff Bridges. But Jeff Bridges' young face budget ran out about halfway through and got real shitty in the third act of the movie.
Yeah, but, like, we still had the greatest moment in cinematic history where Jeff Bridges fights Jeff Bridges on a bridge.
On a bridge. And it was amazing. And the plot of the second Tron movie was less just like, hey, let's be in video games. But it was about, like, the emergence of AI and how that can affect certain things. The whole concept is, like, you can move things back and forth between the realities. And that allows you to, like, maybe take a sick person, put him in the game, fix him in the game, and put him back in real life.
Yeah.
So it was dealing with some more heady sci-fi concepts.
As well as, like, nationalism.
Mm-hmm. The reason I wanted to talk about Tron is because when you showed us Batman, like, from the 70s to, you know, 16, that's a very distant iteration of Batman from the other. But there was also Batman all the way through, and he was growing and changing the whole time.
Yeah.
Tron did not. Tron has just these two tent poles. That's it. That's all there is for mainline Tron aside from games and, like, cartoons and stuff. And there was a similar amount of maturity in writing, in directing, in style, and in everything. And it was really interesting to see how you can have that same growth and that it ties maybe more to cultural needs and what the audience wants rather than just growth of Tron itself. 'Cause they both went in the same direction, even though Tron had nothing in the meantime.
That's interesting. I like that.
Thank you. I made it up myself. Tron doesn't actually exist. I'm just bullshitting for the podcast.
You're right.
Oh, also, Daft Punk did the soundtrack for Tron Legacy, and it goes to pretty much anything.
Yeah.
And they directed the first one.
Who's next?
Next, we have Eddie. Edward,
hey.
You're representing Doom and Doom?
Yes, my name is Edward, and I'm going to be representing Doom from 1993 and Doom from 2016.
I fucking love Doom from 2016.
Dude, it's great.
It's so fun.
Bro, I got it right here in my hand. Look at that. That's Doom.
I see it.
Doom was a video game in 1993. It was one of the first and definitely one of the most influential first-person shooters.
And arcades.
Yes. So Doom, it's a first-person shooter, and it's also, it's not 3D, like with 3D polygons and stuff. The way that they make the game is to emulate 3D environments. So there's rooms and, like, corners to turn around and on all this kind of stuff. It was actually really impressive at the time.
Just looks like it came out of Tron.
Basic plot of Doom, you are a space marine.
Who is actually, I think, officially named Doom Guy.
Doom Guy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
They didn't give him a name in the game because it's a first-person shooter, so it's supposed to be you, the player, you know?
Yeah, you're actually just a floating arm.
That's true.
So you're a space marine, and you have been posted on Mars. And on Mars, they're doing, well, on the moons of Mars, they're doing experiments with teleportation, trying to teleport stuff from one moon to the other. I don't remember the names of the moons of Mars. If one of you guys wants to look that up while I talk, that'd be spicy.
One of them is Phobos. I knew Phobos.
And Deimos.
Oh, yeah, okay. Phobos is where... Okay, never mind. I remember now. We're good. So, you're on Phobos, right? And then some shit happens, basically, when they're doing one of the teleportation experiments.
Side
and
shit.
The other moon, Deimos, disappears. Gone.
What, like gone? Like,
it's just gone. It disappears.
That's inside shit.
And then the portal that goes to Deimos, they're like, where's Deimos? And then boom, demons and shit start pouring out of the portal. Hellfire.
Sounds legit.
Demons, monsters, floating eyeball things with tentacles.
Everything the far right says will become of science.
I really want the audience to see how Eddie's moving his hands whenever he says things. I don't know. I can't tell if he's a bad salesperson or a tap dancer doing that windmill move.
So,
clickety click, demons, clickety click.
All the other space marines, they get killed, but you don't get killed because you were outside the teleporter room on guard duty. Luckily.
Dope.
Then you got to kill all the demons, and you do. And you're on this moon, right? So it's all like built like human-y and stuff. Then you go through the portal to Deimos, and it's like half hell, half, you know, human science facility. And then on Deimos, you go through another portal into hell itself.
Wow.
And you start killing all the demons and stuff. Now you're in hell. And basically, you kill a lot of demons, and then the game ends.
I'm sensing a theme here.
Yeah.
So now Doom 2016 comes out. Now, there was a Doom 2 and a Doom 3. We're not going to worry about Doom 2 and Doom 3.
Doom 3 was pretty bad.
Doom 3 was great. There were floating skulls.
Yeah, so Doom 2016 is just called Doom because it's like a reboot of the series. So what happens in Doom 2016 is there's these researchers on Mars. And what they're doing is they've got this portal to hell on Mars.
Oh, so they know it's hell this time.
And they're using it, right? They're using the portal to, like, suck energy from hell and use it to, like, power stuff and, like, solve Earth's energy crisis and stuff.
I mean, it actually does make sense. I mean, eternal fire and brimstone.
Doom, where religion and science meet.
So they go into hell on, like, expeditions and stuff, and they, like, take demons captive to do experiments, and they find, like, artifacts, and they find this sarcophagus. And then a little later, shit happens. The demons, like, breach the portal. They kill all the scientists. The captive demons all break out.
What? No way.
It's bad news, right?
Who would have thought the demons would have overcome their captors?
You know what's in the sarcophagus?
More demons.
The Doom Guy.
Doom Guy.
Doom Guy.
You're in the sarcophagus. They open it up. You come out. You're like, ch-ch-ch. You pick up a shotgun from somewhere. Actually, I think you pick up a pistol.
It's a pistol.
And then, guess what happens? You murder a bunch of fucking demons.
In hilarious ways.
And it's amazing and glorious. And here's the thing about Doom 2016. Because I know this episode, the theme is like modern versus original representations and tellings of stuff. But what they did in Doom 2016, they were like, you know what was awesome? Doom. So they made Doom just with modern technology. But here's the thing. Both games, you're a guy in a first-person shooter, and you kill a lot of demons. The plot is very minimal, and it's just fun. That's the whole point, is you just sit down and you have a good time. So yeah. I think what Doom represents is that things don't always have to change. Sometimes stuff is good, but that doesn't necessarily mean we shouldn't do retellings of stuff. I think there is a positive point to be made for doing modernizations of stuff, but also we don't have to make huge sweeping changes because sometimes you just want to murder demons. The end. How was that, guys?
That's good.
That's nice. So, Chowder.
All right.
Because I prefer that. Tell us about The Sun Also Rises. I don't remember the name.
Tell us about Red Dawn.
Yes.
All right, so just to clarify.
Tell us about, you know, fucking.
For whom the bell tolls. Taiwo, we're so sorry. We're bad friends.
All right, so just to clarify, what I'm repping is The Emperor's New Groove. It's a animated comedy created by Disney about this emperor named Kuzco, who's just a complete fucking asshole. He's self-centered, believes the world revolves around him, just the whole shebang of douchiness.
Shebang of douchiness.
Yeah, exactly. He is invited to a meal by his advisor, Yzma.
Gotta love Yzma.
And she and her henchman, Kronk, try to assassinate him.
With the poison made especially for Kuzco. Kuzco's poison.
Oh, Patrick Warburton was great in that movie.
He deserved the sequel.
He did.
Let's look at that clear right now.
So anyways, they mess up the assassination and end up turning him into a llama instead.
In his defense, all her vials look alike. She may wanted to rethink her filing system.
So they just dump his llama body in the river, and eventually he washes up and...
his llama body?
Yeah, meets up with...
Pacho,
yes.
John Goodman.
Pacho, a guy who he was about to screw over by destroying his village for like a summer home.
He needed his summer home. It was a birthday gift from himself.
Don't know, don't care.
Anyways, and from there on, it's a buddy comedy kind of thing where the
buddy
two
cop
try...
movie.
Buddy cop?
Not a cop movie, but...
Llama Cops! Starring David Spade, question mark?
Anyways, they journey to go and get Cusco to use him as lab so they can turn him back into a human. And that's the plot of Emperor's New Groove.
And also, he's not wearing any clothes.
Yes.
Most llamas don't.
And the reason I chose Emperor's New Groove was because... Because
it's a reference to the Emperor's New Clothes.
No, not that at all. You guys are all, like, talking about things that, like, have different iterations, but, like, The Emperor's New Groove is interesting in that it started out a very different movie. In production, it was a movie called Kingdom of the Sun. It was supposed to be more of a epic musical, more in line with what you saw in Renaissance era Disney. Lion King, Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, that kind of stuff, right? And Aladdin, that kind of stuff.
Aladdin.
I don't know, the things are coming to my head. Anyways.
I've only seen Aladdin once. Listen, I'm not a Disney guy, so this is, like, very informative for me.
Dude, Aladdin's pretty good.
No, yeah. Emperor's New Groove is my favorite, if that gives you any indication.
Yeah, and here's the thing about Emperor's New Groove. It's very different from what Disney usually makes. The Emperor's New Groove is more in line with something that would be made by Warner Brothers, something that could be seen next to the Looney Tunes.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Emperor's New Groove had a very troubled production. It started out as Kingdom of the Sun, but like because of the failure of Pocahontas and the Hunchback of Notre Dame,
what?
They were like, oh no, we gotta change this. And so it went through multiple rewrites, multiple redesigns, until it eventually became the movie that we know now, The Emperor's New Groove, the straight-up, very sarcastic comedy.
The Disney movie that features the line, "It's a good thing you're not a big fat guy, or this would be really difficult." I love that moment because of the sarcasm, but I feel like that's not something to throw in front of a kid. Like, here's an acceptable thing to say to your friend trying to help you out of a life-threatening situation. Like, no, that's not how that works.
Well, also, the character's supposed to be a jerk.
Yeah. It's true.
And also, he's not wearing any clothes.
Wait, real quick. I'm just a little confused about Pocahontas.
Hans Christian Andersen wrote a story called The Emperor's New Clothes.
Yeah, Eddie, we know.
I have a legitimate question for Chowder. Okay, how did it fail? Because I'm looking...
Didn't make a lot of money, right?
You sure? Because the budget was $55 million, and it says here, according to like Wikipedia, that the box office was $346.1 million.
I think we've already established with Tron Legacy that is not Disney money.
Yeah,
that's not Disney money, bruh.
That is 400%, guys.
Pocahontas was 400%, guys.
You also got to take into account, you know, advertising and distribution.
Yeah, that doesn't sound right.
It definitely was a successful film, but it wasn't Disney successful.
It wasn't the kind of money that they wanted.
Yeah, it wasn't Disney money. That's what Colin said.
Yeah, like, especially in comparison to The Lion
Colin
King.
Colin really wants to move on.
Yeah.
Look at him.
Yeah, Chatter can get the rest of his point out. Keaton, we didn't need to derail with the Pocahontas thing. I wanted to move past that.
I thought we were done. That's why I was asking it.
Oh.
To just sum everything up, Emperor's New Groove, like, went through a transformation in production. I just wanted to talk about, like, how things change in production and how the initial vision doesn't always get seen through to the end, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That makes sense.
Now we're going to move on.
Discussion time.
Okay.
Discussion real quick. I want to begin...
With Batman? Batman Begins?
No, I actually wanted to say something that Eddie's explanation of Doom made me think of.
That means I should win the award.
No, it's just the way you said it about how it like kind of went back and how it's fun. I think you should have included the two other Dooms, Doom 2 and then Doom 3.
Are you trying to tell me that I repped the wrong thing? Because I repped what I wanted to rep.
Nah, it just reminded me of, like, Evil Dead. Like, the first Evil Dead movie was written and directed and acted as though it was a horror movie, but it wasn't scary at all. So then they made the next two, and, like, it was just ridiculous, and they just kind of went with it.
They made them as horror comedies, and everyone loved it.
Yeah, they saw what people liked about their attempts, and instead of trying to, like, be what they necessarily wanted to be, they did something that was good, you know?
No, I don't really know what you're saying.
Yeah, Keenan, I'm having a real hard time following what you're saying right now.
Yeah.
Oh, what I'm saying is, I think they went with it.
We should start the discussion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just fucking did, motherfuckers. All right.
Wait, that was the start of the discussion?
You all are speaking right now, motherfuckers.
Oh, man. Okay, wow.
Well, all right, fine, so fine. No, shut the fuck up, because I'm fucking speaking now.
You gotta formally introduce the discussion. What if someone's listening for the first time?
Now, listeners, we will now begin discussing these topics. Thank you. Let us begin with an open question to all. How do you think transformations necessarily come about? And do you think they are good to transform? Or do you think that series should stick to what they are?
Okay, so they all have a spark from when they were created by Cybertron.
Oh, God.
And this allows them to change shape.
Anyways, I do have something to say about...
Yes, Chowder, please go.
So, how do these changes come about? I think more often than not, they tend to be for practical reasons rather than, like, other kinds of choices, like artistic. Well, not artistic. I can't think of the right word right now.
Yeah, but no, I think that's the right way to put it.
Because, like, let's talk about Batman. Batman has changed.
You've changed, Bruce.
But, like, one of the reasons for that change is because of the comics' code of authority. It used to be that comics were subject to heavy censorships, and whatever the comics code decided was wrong, the stories couldn't approach that. Batman in the 70s, pretty sure the comics code was still there, so I think that's what, like, influences the way those Batman stories played out.
Yeah, it also, going on with practicality, is that towards, like, the end of the century, DC and Marvel, like, wanted to set each other apart from each other, and Marvel became kind of known as a more fun and a sort of, I don't know another way to say it other than brighter.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Comics. And then DC, to rival that and to give, like, the audience something else, decided to push towards gritty.
Right.
And Batman really became a forefront of that idea. And that's a practical thing.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say was Batman, I think he was the term that gets thrown around a lot, and I think it's accurate, is Batman was really campy for a long time.
Yes.
Yeah. And I actually rather like campy Batman.
And then when the, you know, reins were let loose a bit, and he was allowed to be dark, they went, like, real dark for a while.
Yeah.
People only like stuff that's, like, so dark, and they only like it so much. So I think what's happened with a lot of DC stuff is in the last, like, 10 years or so, they've been, I think, really kind of, like, trying to dial it in so that they can hit all those right spots, you know?
Yeah.
That happens with all their movies, too, where they're like, let's make a dark movie. Oh, no, everyone hates it. Let's make it light. And then they can't figure it out, and then the movie sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the comics have a lot, you know, if there's, like, one bad issue, then they can just make the next issue better, and it's okay. Whereas, like, a movie is, like, a many years endeavor.
Yes. Yeah. And that's actually, that's something I wanted to touch on, was the way that people consume media obviously changes over time, where in the 70s you had TV, but it wasn't always accessible. You didn't always have color. There were only, like, a couple channels, and there was no way to record it. Comic books you could get and consume whenever you wanted, but, like, stories still had to follow modern conventions. TV was still, like, a thing that people gravitated towards, and movies were things people gravitated towards, and other forms of media would mimic them. And I think that's really apparent when you look at, you know, Dead Till Proven Alive as something that feels just like part of a procedural show.
Yeah.
It feels like, you know, Mystery of the Week.
Yeah.
It feels like you're like Scooby-Doo.
It was very Scooby.
It was super Scooby. And the Rebirth comic that we read felt like the first episode in, like, a Netflix series, where the way we consume things now, we don't have to worry about being on TV's schedule. We watch when we want to. And the way that that's changed television writing, and that's why we're still in our golden age of TV, shows like Breaking Bad and Game of Thrones really started to say, like, and Lost. Lost should probably definitely be the one that's up there. To say, like, hey, you can make these huge, long story arcs and just digest little bits, where you couldn't do that before because you couldn't count on people to see every episode. And Rebirth feels like that.
Yeah.
It feels like they're expecting you to read every issue of the comic.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, it allows them to not focus on, let's get every part of a story in here, but rather, there are specific themes and tones we want to address. We'll worry about the narrative later.
Yeah. And that was like, the narrative.
Whoa.
All right.
I just got blown back. All three of you started talking.
I will speak because I'm the host.
Hi, Sheriff, taking control.
I was going to say, before I was dual interrupted, is that I think another interesting thing that I think mainly relates to both the Batman that we read and also to Tron is that I think the originals were campy and kind of gimmicky. And then someone came along and said, okay, now let's take this sort of ridiculous plot, but let's add a realistic element to it. Let's actually ask if Kevin Flynn made a computer world and he found AI, how would it actually happen? How would that change Kevin Flynn? Because in the first one, Kevin Flynn's like, you know, a fucking rock star. And then he becomes this hermit, this existential questioning his existence because he discovered life in a computer.
Yeah.
But I think the same thing goes for Batman. It's like, all right, yeah, he's a vigilante who just is like a bat. But like, let's actually talk about his parents being killed. Let's actually talk about, like, what are the stresses of doing this job? And I think that's an interesting approach.
And actually, and I want to tie that point through mine back into Chowder's. The whole thing with the original Tron is that they had to figure out how to do these special effects, whereas now they're commonplace. So the first movie, the focus was, let's make this thing that looks incredible. With the second movie, it was like, we have the technology to make it incredible. So kind of similar to some of the points Chowder was making about, like, I think they were able to focus more on, let's look at how to make a better story and how to evolve this rather than how do we make it look pretty? Right. So, like, they had totally different focuses, and that led them down a totally different path. I don't know. That just struck me like Emperor's.
Yeah. Like, to go back to what Colin was saying about changing towards the tastes of the audience and the demands of the audience, Emperor's New Groove did that too. Like, it came out during a time when people were getting sick of, like, Renaissance-era Disney and all of Disney's very grand, sweeping fairy tale epics, and Emperor's New Groove instead took up a comedic tone that was more in line with other kinds of movies that were coming out around that time. And that decision to make it a comedy also changed everything else about it, like the animation. The way they animate the characters is very different, where Disney normally went for, like, naturalistic and fluid and graceful motions. Emperor's New Groove went with, like, very sharp and very exaggerated motions, because it was a comedy and it had to reflect that, and thus the more Looney Tunes kind of style to it.
Yeah, and I think that's interesting to note, especially because we just talked about both Tron and Batman and Emperor's New Groove relating to the tastes and evolving to suit the audience. However, I think Doom has both done that and not done that.
I think it was meeting a demand that people were having. People were getting sick of, like, the
Call of Duties.
Yeah, the regenerating health, hide and cover kinds of shooters, and Doom, like, was able to strike at the right time with its very aggressive gameplay that people took to it very well, back to basics that people were really wanting.
Yeah, and Eddie, would you agree with that, or?
To a point, I suppose, though that isn't really why I wanted to bring Doom as my thing. The theme today is about, like, transformations. And Doom, between 1993 and 2016, it's very different. But what they changed in Doom was not the core concepts. They gave it the same feeling. You know, they gave it the same amount of plot and everything.
It's fast.
It's a fast game and it's a fun game. So that's what I was trying to say is original Doom in 1993, there's no, like, big sweeping epic story. Most games didn't even have anything close to a story, you know?
Check Sonic.
You know, yeah, like Sonic, it's like, oh, he took some birds, you know?
The birds are in the robots.
What if there was a hedgehog who ran?
And there were games with stories. You know, there were some, like, early JRPGs and stuff that had like really great stories, you know? But a lot of big popular games didn't have stories back then. And then if we do want to take a short look at Doom 2 and Doom 3, Doom 2 is a direct sequel. It's just a lot more of the same. And then Doom 3 came out way later. And at the time of Doom 3, there were a lot of like survival horror type games that were getting really popular, the Resident Evils and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then a lot of the popular shooters at the time were things like Call of Duty. I think what they tried to do, because they were so far removed from the franchise, is I think in creating Doom 3, they tried to emulate some of what was popular at the time. So they tried to add a lot of like scary elements, and they tried to like modernize the controls and the way that like the combat worked. And it's an okay game, but a lot of people who remembered what Doom was like were very unhappy with Doom 3.
Yeah.
And then Doom 2016 comes out, and what they did was they went back to basics and they said, let's just make something fun, because it's great that we have all these games with these big stories, but games are also supposed to be fun. So let's just focus on gameplay first. And that's what they did, and it's fantastic.
Well, yeah, but like the thing about fun is when you're a developer, you have to ask, how is it fun? Because Call of Duty is fun, but fun in a very different way from the way Doom is.
Mm-hmm.
They intentionally made design decisions that gave a different kind of feel from what other games were doing, like, say, the glory kills.
Yes.
Which incentivized players to move closer to their enemies instead of further away.
Yeah, I felt like all the gameplay was just like, how do I get close to them and not die? Because every time you kill someone, you get a chance of like dropping health.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you said that, Chowder, and this is one of my favorite anecdotes, because Doom 3 came out like, what, 2003, 2004?
Oh, goodness. It was on the 360, wasn't it?
It was, but it initially came out around 2003, 2004, so that's 12 years between Doom 3 and Doom. What happened was, kind of around, I think, 2011 or something, they were like, hey, we're making another Doom game. And then they came out and said, we scrapped everything. And people are like, why? And then they were like, well, we kind of realized we were basically making Call of Duty Doom Edition. And we were like, no, we can't just make the same game.
Call of Doomy.
Call of Doomy.
Doom of Duty.
Doom of Doom.
Call Doom Duty.
And I think because of that extended dev cycle, that kind of mirrors basically, I think, everything we brought. It has the legacy of Batman, it has the distance of Tron, and it has the development hell of Emperor's New Groove, just between those two Doom games.
Yeah.
Development hell. Get it?
Ah.
I'm sensing a theme here.
Also, I thought Doom 3 came out later than it did, so I'm going to rephrase. Call of Duty was not the popular shooter at the time. Medal of Honor was.
Yo, Medal of Honor was hype, yo.
Call of Duty came out like a year before Doom 3, so it was not the big thing. Not the big kid on the block yet.
I wasn't gonna throw that in your face, but thank you for throwing it in your own face.
I was thinking, in my brain, Doom 3 came out when the re-release of Doom 3 came out.
Yeah, no.
So something that I wanted to bring up before, Keenan, I thought, chose, by picking Rebirth number one, a very good comic for the theme. First of all, the villain is about like seasons changing and transforming and stuff. Very thematic. But then at the end, we get this short interaction between Bruce and Duke, where Duke says, it says that every time he comes back slightly different. His DNA altered, he's a different person, but he retains all the memories he had last time. He'll come up with new ideas. He comes back better every time. How are we supposed to combat that? And then Bruce says, easy, we come back better each time too.
Oh.
I think that goes to like the point I was kind of making, and I don't think this was on purpose, but it kind of goes along with the way that you have Batman's transformation as a comic book is that they've, in the past like 10 years or so, they've really been kind of like narrowing in on what they think is like the right thing and what their fans are going to enjoy the most. And I think they've been doing a really good job. And they've had like two universal reboots in that time. And I think that now with this newer one, I think they're probably going to stay on it for a while, because it's, I think they've really hit the mark with a lot of these comics in Rebirth.
Rebirth is pretty hype, son. No, I think you all did a pretty good job representing what the theme of this episode was. And I'm glad you guys, you know, drew on each other as well as the original topic. All right, so now we're going to go on to ratings. So if you could, out of 1 out of 5 twists, Just kidding, there's only one. The rest are dead. And you can use halves, because they died in a plane crash, so it's possible.
Jeez.
Let's continue the same order we've been going in.
Okay, so I actually want to ask, am I rating both of the comics, or am I rating them separately? Because I have different feelings about the two comics you provided.
Let's...
How about this? How about we rate them each, and then we average them out?
Okay.
Okay, so the two Batman comics, we have Dead Till Proven Alive, which is also a legal pun, and there's no legality anyway.
There's no law at all.
But they do have some great audio production puns in there, and that actually made me giggle. I'm going to give Dead Till Proven Alive a 1.
Whoa. What?
That was art.
Holy crap.
I don't love camp.
I adore camp.
Too many bugs.
That's the thing. Like so many other people in this friend group love bad movie nights. I hate bad movie nights, and this was the bad movie night of my comics.
You do hate bad movie night.
Get it, Jeffrey? Too many bugs. Camp.
Oh, God. I'm gonna give the Rebirth one a 4 out of 5. I thought nice. It was much more in line, not just with what I expect of a Batman, but also of telling any story I gave a fuck about. There was nothing to care about, absolutely nothing to care about, in the unsubtle, unforgivingly brain-dead mystery that was Dead Till Proven Alive. Rebirth, I thought, was tactful, thoughtful, and even though I thought the plot and the villain were a bit absurd, that didn't ruin the fact that I actually wanted to see where these people were going, despite the fact that I only spent a few pages with them. So that's a 1, and that's a 4. So if you add those together, that's a 5. Divide by 2. I'm sorry, Keenan, you got a 2.5.
Damn. Okay, you just don't appreciate art, okay? Next, Eddie. Hopefully you have more taste than your previous representative.
So I enjoyed both of these. Before I give my rating, I'll real quick say, I think that Rebirth 1 is clearly a far superior story.
What? What are you talking about?
But that I got a lot more enjoyment out of Dead to Proven Alive.
But the stakes are so much higher in Dead to Proven Alive.
So what I'm going to do, I'm going to give Dead to... All right, I'm going to give them both. Okay, no. Here's the thing.
Oh my fucking God.
It's hard. It's really hard.
No, it's not.
Yes, it
one
is.
One sucks, the other doesn't.
I'm going to give both of them a 3 out of 5.
Nice.
Can't you give one a 2 and one a 4?
That's what I was trying to do, but neither of them deserve a 2. Here's the thing. I wanted it to average out to 3.
I wanted mine to average out to 3 as well, but you know, you gotta be honest.
When I say I wanted to average out to 3, I mean, that's how I felt. Like, I felt like together they equal a 3, but also I felt like I wanted to give Rebirth a 3, but then I wanted to give Dead Till Proven Alive a 4. So I'm gonna give them both 3s. So my rating is 3 out of 5 twists.
Oh, fuck, all right.
Shake it up, baby.
3 out of 5 of the twists.
Beatles and shout.
Oh, also, I'm looking at it right now. Alfred was feeding the avocados to a cave of bats.
Wait. Oh,
that's hilarious.
Okay, that makes sense.
Anyway, Chowder, what are your ratings? How many twists do you have in your band?
Okay, so with Dead Till Proven Alive, here's the thing. I like camp, and not just in a sort of ironic, oh, it's so bad, it's good kind of way. I actually genuinely kind of enjoy the silliness that comes from it, because, like, it gives a sort of freedom to tell whatever kinds of stories you want and let the imagination run wild. I've always adored the Adam West TV show, even when it was unpopular to like it.
Rawr IP, Adam West.
They're making another movie with Batman voiced by, Adam West.
Yeah, it was recorded before his death. And Dead Till Proven Alive, I think, is not as good as, like, some of the really silly stuff that came out of the 60s, but I also, like, really like the artwork in Dead Till Proven Alive. I think old school comics, the artwork in them had a sort of character that I feel got lost along the way. With Batman Rebirth, yeah, it's just a good starting point for what seems to be a bigger story. Also, the artwork in there is good. Very bright and clean.
Yeah.
Makes me think of Art Nouveau. I never know how to pronounce it. Art Nouveau?
Nouveau?
There we go. Art Nouveau?
Yeah.
Art Fig Newtons.
I need everyone to know that what I heard, because of lag, was It reminds me of it. Is that how you pronounce it?
I believe the Ukekis of Mesopotamia called it.
But like, the Rebirth comic just doesn't give enough for anyone to really work off of, so I'm just gonna say both are 3 twists out of 5.
All right. So an average of 3.
Average of 3. All right.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right, that was nice.
How did we do this week, Keenan?
You all did really good. I thought you all actually had really good points for once, and you actually spoke them.
Oh, yes, we finally spoke them.
Which was nice.
35 episodes in, we're talking.
I will be giving one of you the golden tape recorder. Isn't it great? Which has the original Saul Cartwright's voice on it.
He's a phony.
The audio waves don't match up, Keenan.
Yeah.
It's capable of knocking out sidekicks. Very useful.
Apparently. And apparently, 2 master detectives who hunt crime for a living will for some reason come after you because this is the real mystery they need to do.
Yeah, man. Like, fuck Darkseid.
The recipient is...
If it's Eddie, I'm gonna shit a brick.
Man, and I was gonna give it to you.
Oh, okay. Well, here.
Yeah, I don't know. You're being a bitch about it now.
Hold on, guys. Let me shove this brick back up my ass.
Yeah, okay, good. It's yours. You now have the original voice of Saul Cartwright.
It's me!
Egad, what a twist, man.
God, fuck.
No, I already made the best twist pun.
I really liked the angles that you took. I also liked how you drew upon other people's topics. I also enjoyed how you tied in conversation to allow other people to talk. I just thought that was really cool of you. So also, not only did you have good things to comment, you actually gave it to other people.
Thanks. Well, I just want to say, I fight for the users.
Yes. End of line, motherfuckers. Just kidding. I have one more thing to say. Don't end line. That about wraps it up. Again, I'm Keenan Kodish, and this week's topic was Batman from the 1970s, Batman issue 222, and also Batman Rebirth from 2016. You can check it out wherever comics are sold. Our next episode will be hosted by one of these cool cats. Which one are you cats?
You don't know?
No.
I know.
You want to tell us who it is?
It's me.
Is it Eddie?
It's you.
We'll be hosted by this cat that is Eddie. He's like a fucking calico.
Hey guys, I am going to be hosting the next episode of the podcast, and it's going to be a versus episode. So if you enjoyed the Skyrim versus Oblivion debate, tune in next week to hear the epic console versus PC.
Ah.
I mean, PC loses, but yeah, whatever.
Keenan already is heated. Good thing he's not part of the debate.
So I'm guessing Colin and Pat are arguing this, or?
No, it's actually Jeff and Jeff.
Ah.
Ah, neither of which know anything about that.
The two people who play the most video games.
Yes. Great. All right. Be sure to read up on consoles and PCs, everything about both of those. Read all the literature before it airs next week on... When's it going to air?
Just read your user manuals.
It's going to air September 15th.
It's going to air September 15th, Keenan.
If any of you listening want to contact us, you can find us on Twitter and Facebook at Geeking Program, or email us at commongeekingprogram@gmail.com. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, leave us a review. It's a great way for like more people to find our show. Recommend us to your friends, your mom, like your cousin you never talked to, and like you're at a reunion and you don't have anything to say. Just be like, have you listened to Comic Geeking Program? And he'll be like, no. And then you can be a nerd and then like be a subject of ridicule by your family.
Yep.
If you want to know more, go to comicgeekingprogram.com. That's .commercial. Thank you.
End of line.
End of line.
This episode of the Common Geeking Program was hosted by Keenan Kodish, joined by Colin Ketchin, Edward Ryan, and Taimul Chowdhury. This episode was sponsored by, well, certainly not Disney money, I'll tell you that. The podcast is created and produced by Colin Ketchin and Jeff Levitt, with this episode edited by me, Jeff, and featuring original music by Colin Ketchin. If you like this show, follow us, tell your friends, and leave a review. We hope you tune in for our next episode on September 15th, and thank you for listening to this.
The angles that you took. I also liked how twist, you drew man. Upon like, other
God
people's.
No, I already made the best twist pun.
No,
drew on other people's. You know.
No, I mean, but Eddie, you know what, guys? There were four topics.
I also enjoyed how you
and it wasn't solved. That conversation. Was
I'm going to pull an Eddie here talk, and give an acceptance speech.
I think this season is going to be the one that has my redemption arc in it.
It's
where the writers are really going to give my character a resolve.
Oh my God! Shut this out, Jeff. Blah blah blah.
Oh my God,
guys! I was actually doing the podcast.
No, I would shut up if Timul would shut up. Up, all right.
No, Tybull's not talking that much. You're talking
yeah,
about
he was.
You.
No,
shut
listen,
the fuck
listen.
Up. Hi, Sheriff. Anyway.
What a fucking mess.